There we go. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. The first report is the one-time turnover savings. As of the pay period ending August 4th, 2023, we had $3.7 million in potential one-time savings. Last month, we forecasted $3,744,000. We had a decrease of about $36,000 since last month's update. Last month, we didn't have the information to report in the first two lines. So after the first 200 hours of payroll data was posted, one-time turnover savings was $218,700. In addition to that, $105,000 is anticipated to be reimbursed through ARPA funding. The $36,000 increase that I mentioned was a result of those first 200 hours of payroll that generated average turnover savings of $1,620 per hour versus our estimate of $1,800 per hour. That's a $180 per hour difference. 180 times 200 is 36,000, and that's the reason for the decrease, the shortfall. So for the rest of the year, we're estimating another $3.4 million to be included into our forecasted savings amount. Once again, we come to a total of $3.7 million in potential one-time savings. Do you have any questions about this report? And if not, I'll go on to the next one.
See, no questions.
All right, in our next report, we have ongoing turnover savings. This month, our forecasted ongoing turnover savings is $467,000. This is up by $224,000 from last month's ending balance of $243,000. The $224,000 increase comes from three line items. The first one is next to the yellow number 4. $86,150 is an increase of $22,892 from last month. This is from turnover savings being generated from FY 2023 employees finally selecting their benefits. So that's one increase. The second one is from our forecasted ongoing turnover savings of $545,000 that we estimate for the entire year. That decreased by $61,000, and that's generated from FY 2024 employees finally selecting their benefits. Third is the most important that I want to highlight. We're adding in $262,550 as a contingent amount that might come back to us if the legislature approves the supplemental funding for one court commissioner position. Because if approved, it would replenish the court's ongoing turnover savings that is currently being used to fund it. Does anyone have any questions on this report?
Questions?
All right.
It does not appear to be any questions.
Thank you. All right, on to the ARPA expenses. Since last month, we've spent $308,500 on ARPA eligible projects, and now the balance is $5.079 million available to spend before the cutoff date of 12/31/2024. Below that table are some additional information. Looking at the historical trends, you'll see the IT access to justice use for the last three periods. The balance available to spend is $4.462 million. For the last 3 months spending, the average monthly expenditure has been $334,600. The forecasted number of months to spend that $4.5 million balance available was approximately 13 months. And since there is 16 months left until 12/31/2024, we forecast that their balance will be entirely spent by that date. Then on the left-hand side, under BKLG run rate calculation, if current trends continue, we anticipate funds to last until the January 5th, 2024 pay period. That's longer than what we showed in the prior report, where we anticipated that it would be December 22nd, 2023 pay period, And before that, it was September 29th, 2023. Also, we anticipate that all of the ARPA project funds will be expended before the cutoff date of 12/31/2024. Does anyone have any questions on this report?
See no takers.
Okay. The next one is the forecasted available one-time funds. Since last month, the remaining forecasted funds available for FY 2024 year-end spending requests in the amount of -79,962 has increased to a positive $328,550, which is an increase of $408,500. One part of the variance or the increase is what I showed you earlier. It was a result of those first payrolls for FY 2023 that posted at $324,000. It was those first 200 hours of payroll that generated turnover savings of $1,620 per hour versus our estimate of $1,800 per hour, which resulted in a shortfall of $36,000. Also, last year, we were using $2,000 per pay hour as our estimate for forecasting turnover savings, and we have now lowered that to $1,800 an hour this year, primarily due to fewer positions being vacant. And also last year, the number of open positions was in the low 60s, and now they're in the mid 50s, or actually at 50, 49 or 50. Also, HR did a study, and they're seeing a decrease in how long it takes to fill a position. That period of time from a position being vacated to that position being filled provides a one-time turnover savings. The longer the period of time in between, the more savings there are that goes into this bucket. So the shorter amount of time that it takes to fill a position decreases our turnover savings. In the next month, we will evaluate whether our forecast should be lowered from $1,800 an hour to something closer to $1,620 per hour. Another reason for the variance is the reserve balance from FY 2023 carry forward increased by $22,000 because of a special request that the legislature funded to cover wellness council funds, which needed to be carried over into the new year. Most importantly is the $421,500 that's being added back in. This month, there are two new year-end requests that were approved, but they are also included in the legislative request by JWI for FY 2024 one-time funding. And since there's a possibility of receiving this funding from the legislature before the end of FY 2024, they have been added back as contingent legislative supplemental funding. This is the first time we've showed contingent legislative supplemental funding, which added to our total sources. As a result, our remaining forecasted funds available for FY 2024 spending requests shows $328,550 available for future use. So, are there any questions about any of the reports?
I'm seeing no questions.
Okay, thank you again, Carl.
Thank you.
Jordan, would you take us through the request for some grant approval?
Thank you, Carl. It would be my pleasure. Good afternoon, council members. This request begins on page 274 of your materials packet. So I am happy to report that the grant application proposal approved by the council in March of this year to the National Center for State Courts has been subsequently awarded. And the request today is a request for a motion to vote on accepting these funds, executing the agreement with National Center for State Courts, and moving forward with the project. I will note before I'm happy to answer any questions that the draft agreement that's included in the materials has since been approved by the National Center for State Courts and our own internal AOC council. So the language in this draft copy is intact and ready to go. there are no changes to mention. So in case that influences anyone's questions or vote. So with that, I'll pause. Happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, would request a motion to vote on the acceptance of these funds. Thank you.
All right. First, I have a question. Gosh, I feel like that. Mighty bee. Any questions as to the application, contract, otherwise as to this?
Right. So we're hiring somebody at Ronaldby for 2 years. So that one is maybe a third. Is that how it goes?
Yes, we are. Contract.
It's not a whole lot of money, so it's got to be someone who's already otherwise employed, right?
Yes, so, they are providing services in other areas as well. We will be contracting.
And I was trying to figure out what they're actually going to do. It says they're going to facilitate and implement, but are they going to contact parties? Are they going to contact the court? What are they going to actually do?
Yeah, they're going to do all of those things as we try to figure out the best way to implement some kind of fiction diversion initiative. So they'll take the lead on gathering all of the interests. Parties together, talking about it, providing recommendations, some of which will ultimately come back to this group.
Also, so they're going to suggest policy.
I guess likely some of it will be policy. I don't know if everything could be implemented without some kinds of policy changes. So I'm thinking that might be our solution.
I'm probably seeing somebody join our mission hearings from state courts saying, Judge, could we refer this to a diversion program somewhere, or that's something that's not vision.
Well, yes, eventually. I don't know that they would join each of those hearings individually, but I do think the idea is to do that and make those kinds of resources available to judges. So I don't know that they'd be in there in half the time to go to each individual hearing, but to say here is something that we now have available to refer this to whatever.
So as part of their job responsibilities, will they be going out to the different districts and looking at how evictions are running in those districts to the extent there are differences, or are they going to be focusing on third district and then basing recommendations on kind of how things work? And I'm just wondering how broad
the effort will be broader than. The idea will be to see what we can learn. Jurisdiction.
That's good.
Any other questions?
Jordan, would you clarify for sure that this new person is not an employee of the courts? Is that correct?
That is correct. And that was designed from the beginning with that intent. This is a individual that will be hired by People's Legal Aid, the nonprofit, who is the pass-through recipient of these funds. So yes, this is not a court employee.
And People's Legal Aid, I don't recognize that name. Is that a national foundation or?
So my understanding is that this is People's Legal Aid Utah. I believe that they are a broader organization, but this is the local nonprofit, People's Legal Aid.
And the People's Legal Aid took over the eviction and debt collection calendars that used to be those huge calendars that used to be before Judge Parker. And there was a bunch of volunteer attorneys there at the bar. You still receive People's Legal Aid took over that. Extension out to that.
It's pretty new. It's like the last few years.
Yeah, the last couple of years that they got started.
Yeah.
Other questions? Well, this.
I guess my only comment would be I know the law schools have both looked at clinics in this area, so I would just encourage whoever's administering this program to make sure that's coordinated.
Any other
And just to be clear, diversion meaning we're keeping them out of court. Is that, I mean, because when I think of diversion in a criminal context, that is what we're doing. But
yes.
I'm just wondering, is that the goal here as well?
That's the goal, is to see if there are ways we can find find ways to resolve the disputes. Other than a judgment, right?
Okay.
Right, this matter is on our agenda for action.
I move that we approve accepting the award from NCSC. Second.
Discussion of motion. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any extensions or opposed? Seeing none, that passes.
Thank you, council.
Number nine on the agenda, Lisa.
Yeah, just one rule back from public comments, the new vexatious record requester rule that I'm pretty excited about. Sorry. So we had one, and it was in support of the rule. It just, there was a question about whether if a vexatious, someone who's been deemed a vexatious records requester hires an attorney who needs access to records in order to determine whether they can help them or represent them. And I think, you know, Paul's in planning, the conversation was, I think that's contemplated for in the rule already, because the attorney themselves wouldn't be the vexatious requester. And then also, of course, the court and my office in particular, we're never going to deny a reasonable request from an attorney for records for our clients. So I don't know, just Tara, if you guys wanted to comment more, but the motion here would be to approve this as final with a November 1st effective date.
Any questions? Any motions?
Move to approve. I think it's one of my litigants that's probably harassing your office, so.
You have a long list, like we're ready to go. We're ready to file.
Second.
All right, any discussion of the motion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Extensions or opposition? Seeing none, that passes. Right, we are to 10, we're ahead of schedule. Brody.
Thank you very much. So in the packet, I wrote a memo that deals with, so we went through a cybersecurity audit, and some of the recommendations that came out of there was that we needed to work on our internal IT policies. And part of this, we have a group internally that is our technology advisory subcommittee. We met with that group first, we reviewed the internal policies, and then we took those policies and then we then routed it through policy planning and technology. So what I'm here before you today is we have two internal ones that I need to get approval for. And then after this, following this, we have subsequent things we'll be working on, like an incident response plan, also cybersecurity training, and then also a strategic plan to as well. But this is the beginning of those things that were found in that cybersecurity audit.
So I thought we were already doing this class. I've seen emails saying here's a cybersecurity course, you gotta take that.
We are doing them currently internally. Part of the audit was that we didn't have an actual policy written down, documented, that says these are the things that we've required in IT. The internal policies are more for if we have vendors, contractors, staff, and we have a breach, things like that, that's what that focuses on. We are currently also using DTF, the cybersecurity policy. One thing we're doing, cybersecurity training, we are building one in-house that is based on tools that we have for the court system, and then the training will be based on that. So that's one thing I want to move us away from is DTF, since it's great, because it covers right now something we don't have, but I think we need something that focuses on the tools we have, our email and things like that.
Any other questions for probably items up for action as well?
I'll move to approve these two items, IT 1000 and IT 1115.
Second.
Motion in the second. Any discussion of those? All in favor?
Aye.
Discussions for nay votes? Seeing none, that passes. Going on to item number 11, I see that we have Judge Christensen Forster with us. Mr. Stiles is in the room. Who's leading off? Judge?
No, I'm here, but kind of here. Hold on. Ah, see, there we go.
You are here.
These computers, I tell you. Hello, and thank you for having me. I'm here to report on the appellate court board meetings that we've had in the last quarter. We've had a few meetings, and over the last 5 months, several times. First, to report to you, first, both courts have met with the Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission. The Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals each individually met with JPEC, and then we were able to have a joint meeting as well. And there is going to be a new pilot project concerning appellate judge evaluation. There's a need to increase, we think that there's probably a need to increase the number of folks and people who evaluate us, because right now the sample size of evaluators is so very small that it could create vulnerabilities for some of us when they're, you know, when we're doing our evaluations. With JPEC recommended that we put in place a program where district court judges and juvenile court judges evaluate the opinions of appellate judges. There's, you know, there's some negatives and hopefully a lot of positives to putting this pilot program in place. But we'll try it and see if maybe there's a way that it can work and that can increase the number of evaluators for each appellate court judge. Does anybody have any questions about that? We've also
know that, but it wouldn't be limited to judges.
Yeah, there'll be
any district or juvenile court judge. And it would start off with, do you feel like you're, you know, do you read the opinions frequently enough that you feel like you can implement judge in this, the work we do? And if the answer was yes, then that would be included in the language. So.
Yeah, and the other qualification, I think, would be that they've had to have some interaction either by reading opinions or will limit the period, the review period, you know, to like the prior year or prior 2 years or something like that. There'll be a time limitation as well. Is that right, Judge Mortensen?
Yeah. So theoretically, as it always certainly, you can hold a reversal against the appellate court for a decade. You know you're human. There you go.
So any comments about what someone feels about the outcome will be thrown out. It's just, did we understand the opinion? Do you see?
There'll be a series of questions, yes. None of which will be, did we get it right? Back to you, Michelle.
Awesome. Next, I would like to report on our meetings with Jonathan Puente and Judge Rich Mrazek on the Office of Fairness and Accountability's work. The board discussed the strategic plan and the racial and ethnic diversity work group's efforts in that regard, and we are all fully supportive of the work that those that office and that work group are doing. At the May Judicial Council meeting, we reported on our plan to submit a budget request to add another appellate mediator to the appellate mediation office, and we are happy to report that that position was funded. And the hiring committee will be interviewing for the new mediator position next week, because we'll all be together this week, but next week, hopefully. And that will hiring this new appellate mediator will hopefully ease some of the burden on specifically the Court of Appeals. You know, if the mediation office is able to take 20, 30, 40 more cases during the year, that would certainly cut down on our caseload a little bit, and that will hopefully help us all. I will just as a point of to let you know, we were really, really pleased with the number of applicants that we received for this position. It was, you know, 35, 40 people applied for this position. So I think that both says good things about our appellate courts and our, you know, our offices, and also that people are interested in working in mediation. So we were all pleased to hear those numbers. Both courts continue to operate on a hybrid work schedule. Most employees and most judges are in the office here at the office 2 to 3 days a week. Some judges are here 5 days a week. Of course, all of our oral arguments are mostly in person. We do have the capability of, like I was sick the other day, I had COVID, and it was probably not the best idea for me to show up at court to hear oral arguments. And so now with the technological capabilities that we have in both courtrooms, I was able to stay at home, but I was able to, you know, appear remotely at the oral arguments, and it worked just flawlessly. So we are very happy for and thankful to IT for getting our courtrooms all set up so that we have those capabilities. I do believe also that the Supreme Court has had an occasion to do, you know, part in remote, part in person as well. So I think it's going to work great, and we're very grateful for that. We did meet in July, and we heard from everybody requesting legislative funding for the next fiscal year, and we provided a ranking recommendation to the budget committee. And I think that's about it. Does anybody have any questions? I mean, Judge Mortensen might be able to answer them better because he's there with you, but I'd be happy to answer any questions or tell you more about what we're doing. But if not, I will leave you to your next agenda item.
Mr. Stiles has anything to add? I have nothing to add. Thank you, Miranda.
Thank you. I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, we'll move on to item number 12. I apologize that we so far I have just a compensation.
Okay.
He'll probably take this.
I'll talk for 45 minutes about this one. Let me put the Brianna can sharing part. As a reminder, these are the budget priorities that you established in August. Chief mentioned that here before the officials and judicial compensation commission and requested that they request a 10% increase for judicial officers. A decision to make that is where patient falls among the temporary. Because we will, in order for judicial compensation increases to pass, the Judicial Council does need typically to weigh in through its staff and myself through NADA on these budget issues. So we will. Other things. So, where does it rank?
How did we rank it last year? Number one. Let me ask a question. Did we hear back from the Board of District Court Judges? And I know we were going to have another conversation about that, but I'm just curious.
Yes, so we did, and
it's through by email. I think we all.
Oh, did we all get it? They came around.
But they did provide a ranking to us of the 8 judicial officers that they are requesting the juvenile. Or it's the Board of Juvenile Court Judges had already provided their ranking to us during that August meeting. So yes, they ranked them 1 through 8. But then do we need to mix that ranking at some point?
Well, that's a question for you. So as of right now, yes. If what you're asking is, do we need to mix the district court judges with the juvenile court judges? Yes. That is probably less pressing from a time perspective than this, and where than this other one, right? Because with regard to ranking the two lists of court level judges, district and juvenile,
it's not going to come up until next year.
It won't come up until the end of this year at the earliest, right? The others will come up a lot earlier. This other would mean having judicial compensation and how much you are going to direct us as your staff to put for that.
What's the dollar figure on that 10%?